WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right, you are now locked into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and we've got a great show in store for you all. On today's show, we will invite Matt Argelander, who is the Michigan State football beat writer for the State News. Matt will join us to again preview the big matchup this Saturday at 8 p.m. on primetime television, the Michigan State Spartans playing host to the Oregon Ducks. Matt will talk all things college football and Sparty with us in just a sec. You don't want to miss that chat. We'll also talk about Floyd Mayweather, who actually was found to have used an illegal IV dating back to right before he took on Manny Pacquiao in the, quote, fight of the century. Also, Richard Sherman is backing Tom Brady and saying that, hey, he didn't cheat. It's only cheating if you get caught. We'll debate about that. We'll also have Throwback Thursday for you and even give you a very small fantasy football preview as the NFL officially starts its regular season tonight, when, of course, the New England Patriots, they will play host to the Pittsburgh Steelers. All of that and so much more, as well as take your calls the entire hour. If you have anything that is on your current sports noggin or your current sports chest that you just got to get off, hey, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. But hey, without further ado, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this September 10th. Fifty years after the 1965 National Championship football team took the field at Michigan State University, one of the team's stars, Clinton Jones, is getting inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. The running back is also featured in the upcoming documentary, Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, the story of Michigan State's role in desegregation. Now, the film is being made by the daughter of Clinton's teammate, Jean Washington. MSU football fans can get their first look at the film, along with a conversation with Clinton and Gene and the filmmaker Maya Washington, today, September 10th at 6 p.m. at Conrad Hall. The event is totally free, and Current Sports will be in the house. The Lansing Lugnuts broke a 3-3 tie with three runs in the seventh and then held on tight to defeat the Great Lakes Loons 6-5 in game one of the Midwest League postseason on Wednesday night at Dow Diamond. Now, the best of three series now shifts to Lansing's Cooley Law School Stadium for game two on Thursday night. That's tonight, with the Lugs one win away from advancing to the Eastern Division Finals. After a year at the high school level, Matt Holtz is returning to college lacrosse. How about that? Now, Holtz was announced yesterday as the head coach of the Olivet College's men's lacrosse team. Now, Holtz takes over the comments after spending last spring leading the Okemos girls lacrosse team. He earned LSJ Coach of the Year honors after guiding the Chiefs to a 16-4 record and a Division II regional title in his lone year with the program. Congrats to Matt. That's a big move there. Logan Forsyth doubled in a run and homered for another, leading a four-homer Tampa Bay Rays assault on the Detroit Tigers pitching to avoid a series sweep with an 8-0 win last night at Comerica Park. Now, the loss halted Detroit's winning streak at 2. The Tigers haven't won three consecutive games since August 18th to the 20th. Now, their only three-game winning streak since the All-Star break. Now, they haven't swept a three-game series since the opening week of the season. Oh, that's bad. Oh, my goodness. All right, Tigers. Joseph Fourier, he signed with the Arizona Cardinals after visiting with them Wednesday. According to multiple reports, the third-year tight end will effectively replace Ifeanyi Moma, who was with the Lions, if you remember, briefly in 2014 after he reportedly suffered a torn meniscus. Now, the 6'7" Fourier had a solid rookie campaign after going undrafted with 18 catches for 207 yards and 7 touchdowns. He also had some funky fresh moves after those touchdowns. I mean, he was really known for his dancing after those TDs, right? Really love Fourier as a personality. Last year, He played in just 7 games, though, as he dealt with a lingering ankle injury. On the eve of his record-breaking mega fight with Manny Pacquiao on May 2nd, pound-for-pound King Floyd Mayweather Jr. took an intravenous injection of saline and vitamins that was banned under World Anti-Doping Agency guidelines. That's according to a report by SB Nation yesterday. Now, 3 weeks after the fight, Floyd Mayweather received an exemption from the United States Anti-Doping Agency, the report said. However, Nevada State Athletic Commission Executive Director Bob Bennett said USADA does not have authorization to grant an exemption. We'll have more on that story in just a bit. And Buffalo Bills pass rusher I.K. Enumpale was given at least a 4-game suspension, which could be as many as 6 games, for breaking Geno Smith's jaw with a punch in the New York Jets locker room, according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. Now, Enumpale was cut immediately by the Jets, picked up by the Buffalo Bills, cut by the Bills after preseason, and added to their practice squad. The NFL cited a violation of the personal conduct policy in suspending Enumpale, Rappaport reported. We've made it, folks. The dog days of summer have given away to September, sweeping away meaningless preseason fare for football games that finally matter. Tonight, Tom Brady makes his season debut after fighting off an offseason filled with drama from Deflategate. The New England Patriots will play host to the Pittsburgh Steelers to kick off the NFL regular season. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts and be a part of the show, you know that number. You probably got it docked there right now on speed dial, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. So much to get to, so little time. It's time to start the show. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Thursday, September 10th, 2015. We've got a great show in store for all of you today, and what you just heard was really an incredible moment. And how big has Yoenis Cespedes been for the New York Mets? I tell you what, the Tigers giving him up for little to nothing, and Cespedes really being a big component as to why the Mets currently have a 7-game lead over the Washington Nationals in the NL East. I mean, Yoenis Cespedes has been just fantastic. That occurred actually in the 8th inning when things were all, I believe, tied up, and Cespedes just delivers a great hit on the ball, and boom, just like that, the Mets have the lead, and they went on to coast to a win there. They actually swept the Washington Nationals starting back on Monday, in which the Mets won 8-5 on Tuesday. Close game there, in which the Mets toppled the Washington Nats 8-7. And then last night, a 5-3 win. Just an ugly outing for the Washington Nationals, who, of course, are competing in that NL East. And right now, again, the New York Mets, they have a 7-game lead in the NL East. Impressive stuff. The New York Mets, to me, they have been the best story of the MLB year thus far. And a lot of that has to do with, yes, Yoenis Cespedes. And, you know, there were a lot of talks to see whether or not the Tigers would, of course, make a run at Yoenis Cespedes after this year to try and get him back in a Detroit Tigers jersey. But I tell you what, if the Mets go far, and it looks as though the Mets are already clearing up space in order to keep Yoenis Cespedes back, especially, I mean, if you have a gym like that, you don't want to give him up. You don't want to give him up. So just really unbelievable stuff. And actually, when looking at this 7-game lead, for the Mets in the NL East. You know, I have to rewind time and think about what occurred back in 2007. I don't want to, really cry over spilt milk, but I just can't help but think about it. You know, back in 2007 when the New York Mets around the same time actually had a 7-game lead within their division. They had a 7-game lead. I believe it was maybe like 7.5 at that time. And, you know, they were, you know, getting ready for the postseason. And then what happens? They go 5 and they win 5 games out of their last like 16 or 17 games. And they end up losing the division in heartbreaking fashion. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen right now, because I believe the New York Mets, they're playing, you know, probably the best baseball in baseball right now. I mean, they are absolutely unbelievable. But I just can't help but think about just the bad luck that the Mets have had in their past. But great stuff, though. And as a Detroit Tigers fan, for all you guys out there listening who are Tigers fans, I mean, you got to be just saying, man, I mean, not too long ago, Yoenis Cespedes was donning a Detroit Tigers jersey. And now look at him. Crazy stuff, man. But congrats to the New York Mets. I really hope they keep this thing up and they keep a stronghold in the NL East, because they are certainly fun to watch. Fun stuff. Well, welcome to the show, folks. We've got a great one in store for you all. Later on in the hour, we will invite Matt Argelander. We've had Matt on before. He's an MSU football beat writer for the State News, who does one fantastic job. Him and also Omari Sankofa, Omari, I believe, has just been picked up by Sports Illustrated and their college campus tour of writers to sort of give insight into the respective sports on college campuses. And so Omari is actually writing for Sports Illustrated. He's done a fantastic job. We've been trying to get Omari on for quite a long time. But, you know, around this time right now, I mean, there are a lot of students on Michigan State's campus at 1 o'clock that have classes, okay? So we'll try to get Omari on maybe next week. But, you know, we'll bring his coworker on, Matt Argelander, who has been a friend of the show for quite a long time, as he will give his take on the Michigan State and Oregon matchup this Saturday. Everyone's pumped. Everyone's excited for it. So you don't want to miss that chat. We'll also have Throwback Thursday for you, give you a fantasy football overview as the NFL regular season officially starts tonight. How about that? Oh, I'm excited. I tell you what, every time I think about it, I get chills up my spine. I mean, it's a fantastic, fantastic time of the year, folks. And, you know, I got to get my fantasy football lineup straightened out. I got to get my pick'em straightened out. I'll also do a pick'em league, streak for cash. I do it all. I'm thinking about doing DraftKings maybe this weekend. So it's going to be a fun year. A fun year with immense possibilities, baby. And this Sunday, I will be glued to my television. After we get done covering the Oregon game, I'm going to be glued to my television watching just about every single NFL game I can. So we'll give you a brief fantasy football overview to try and get your roster straightened out. We'll also, you also get our thoughts on the NFL year and so much more. Again, that number to call is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know, I was thinking about this, Isaac. I was just, you know, driving home yesterday, and I was actually reading an article in which MSU Athletics wants Spartan fans who come out to this Saturday's game to participate in what they're dining as a stripe out. Have you heard about this?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
Idea.
Yeah, and I think odd number seats, you know, they either wear green or white, and even number seats wear the opposite. I guess you can find it out by looking at your ticket. And, you know, they're trying to have like a sprinkling of green and white throughout the crowd, and it's supposed to look like a stripe formation. Should be very cool stuff. And I said, you know, going back to, you know, the conversation we had last year about, you know, having a good crowd on a nationally televised game this big, it's very, very, very important. I believe last year, the game that everyone was talking about, in which many were not happy, especially specifically with the Michigan State student section, the Michigan State and Nebraska game, if you remember, was a nationally televised game. And, you know, it just really looked bad when the cameras were panning, you know, around the crowd. Then it gets to the student section, and more than half of the student section is gone to the bars already celebrating the victory. We all know what happened. Nebraska, they made a bit of a run in that fourth quarter, made things a bit dicey, but MSU eventually pulled out that game. So for me, I mean, this game is huge. Michigan State, Oregon, you want your fan base, you want your student section to be at capacity. You certainly do, especially if nothing deters you. Because I was one of the few, actually, last year, who took the side of the Michigan State students. because of the weather that occurred that night. I mean, it was I was out there filming the entire game, and I didn't even want to really be out there. I was like, all right, let's end this. Let's go to the locker room. Let's do our interviews. Let me file my story now. You know what I mean? It was just bad conditions outside. So I really understood on a Saturday night, college students looking at the score. Michigan State pretty much has it in the bag. That's what's going through their head. Let's go hit the bar and let's celebrate. I get where the students are coming from. But Saturday, it looks like it's going to be a great day. You know, sunny skies all day. You know, I think it's going to hit like 67, 70 degrees. You know, nationally televised, Oregon. If the game is close throughout, hey, the student section has to be there. And I get, because I was a student. I went to Michigan State University. I attended games. I was a part of the student section. So I understand where they're coming from. But at the end of the day, there's certain circumstances in which you got to be there for your squad. If that thing is close in the fourth quarter, and again, if there's no rain or anything like that, and the student section is a bit thin, hey, I'm going to bash him on Monday's radio show. I got to be honest with you.
And you have every right to, Al, because I totally agree with you, and I side with the students as well last year. I was in the game. I left with 7 minutes left because I was in my getup for the game, which were striped overalls. You know, I had nothing besides overalls.
Hold on, pause. So you're one of those guys that were wearing the green and white striped overalls.
Correct.
In the student section last year at that Nebraska game.
You could see me on ESPN last year multiple times. During the Michigan game, I had front row.
That's great.
The school's done a lot for me. I decided to support it.
Love it. No, that's great, man.
Anyway, 40-degree weather. I was in those. I was shivering the entire game. I was a little bit worried about hypothermia, not going to lie. So when it was 7 minutes left, the Spartans were up by 3 touchdowns just about. Yeah, you're dang right. I bolted out of that stadium, went to the cafeteria, got some heat, and got some pizza. But at the end of the day, that wasn't the let up in that game. The let up was from the offense and mainly from the defense, but also the offense,
because
who gave up so many points.
Yeah, because you remember it was a 27-3 lead, Michigan State lead going into the fourth quarter. The final score ended up being 27-23, the final of that game. That's how big of a comeback it was. And then, you know, we talked with the players after the game, and they talked about how, if we had our student section there, rooting us on, that's momentum. And I get where they're coming from. Don't get me wrong. I get where they're coming from. But at the end of the day, you got to handle business no matter who's in the crowd on the football field, you know?
Yeah, and now the other thing about that is these players, this is for just about all of them, maybe there are some brilliant geniuses in the mix, but the reason they got full ride was because of athletics. It was because of their football talent. This is what they go to college for free to do. They've got to put up in those situations. And it's sad because after that game, the attention didn't go to the lapses of Michigan State special teams, defense, or offense. The attention went to the student section. The student section is not what gave up 21 late points. Come on.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Anyway, though. No, Oregon game, though, that will not be a factor, I guarantee you, because it will be nice and warm out. No, I could wear overalls. I will not. I will be on the sideline. I'm going to try to maintain a silhouette, maybe, of professionality for that game. No overalls this time around. Maybe under my suit. Maybe under the suit.
Maybe under it, right? Yeah, because you'll be in a different capacity involved with this Saturday's game as opposed to the Nebraska game last year. I understand. I agree with you because I was one of the few, man. I mean, there were different, people within the area, and we got a few callers that said, oh, man, I mean, how could you not stay, blah, blah, blah. But I get it. I get where you guys are coming from, man. So this is Oregon. I'm not knocking on Nebraska. Nebraska is a great team. I mean, they have a very competitive team every single year. But this is Oregon. This is a team that competed in a national championship last year, folks. This is a team that every single year is just about in the talks to compete for the college football playoff and a national championship. I mean, this is Oregon. Do I need to say that again? This is Oregon, folks.
Could you repeat it, Al?
Yeah, this, This is Oregon. So this is a bigger game. Let's be honest here. With a lot of implications as you look at the entirety of the season. I'm also excited. It's going to be a busy day for me, man. After I get off the air here, I saw that there. I'll be getting ready for a press conference at Michigan State's Breslin Center. There's like some secretive surprise press conference going on. If I could read the email here. And I think, you know, I was thinking about, you know, trying to guess once I read the email what exactly it would be. This is from John Lewandowski, the head guy when it comes to media relations for Michigan State Athletics. He says that, quote, media advisory. This is all in bold, too, and in caps. Media are encouraged to attend a special MSU Athletics press conference Thursday, September 10th at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time at the Breslin Center. So that's where I'll be at 4:30. I have no idea what it is, but if I had to guess, there's also another event that I'll be going to right after that shoot. And that's, of course, what I stated to lead our headliners. Of course, Clinton Jones, Gene Washington, and Gene's daughter, Maya Washington, will be giving you guys a sneak peek of the new documentary, Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, which sort of recounts the time during Duffy Daugherty's time here at Michigan State and how he recruited blacks from down south to play for his team for Michigan State. He was really the ahead of the curve when it comes to that, and that's why you saw so many Michigan State greats, African-American football greats like Bubba Smith, Gene, Clinton Jones, who would be inducted to the College Football Hall of Fame in December. So I really think with Gene and Clinton being in town right now to unveil that documentary at 6 p.m., at 4:30, I think they may be honored or something, you know, like that at the Breslin Center. That's my guess. That's just a shot in the dark.
And that would be quite the coincidence if there was nothing related to that right before the Oregon game. There's not – they planned this all out. I'd be surprised as well. And Al, didn't you say that there was something going on at halftime of that Oregon game where Clinton was being honored?
Yeah, Clinton, he will get his number retired into the Ring of Fame at Spartan Stadium. I don't know if you ever looked up and you see the retired numbers up there. So Clinton Jones, and deservingly so, he will be getting his number retired during that ceremony. I'm also told, it's rumored, that Le'Veon Bell, Pittsburgh Steelers running back, will also be in the house and may even walk Clinton Jones out of the tunnel. Wouldn't that be something?
Does he get fantasy points for that? Does he get me fantasy points?
No, I wish. Oh. I wish, because he is on one of my fantasy football teams, but he does not. But yeah, Le'Veon Bell will be walking Clinton out, and they will be, I guess, I mean, this is rumored. It's all rumored. This could totally be wrong, but I'm just saying what's on the rumor mill right now. But of course, Le'Veon Bell and his Pittsburgh Steelers, they play tonight, so that will free him up this weekend to do that. So we'll see if he's in the house. It's alumni day, so we'll see Mateen Cleaves and Steve Smith. Tom Izzo will be there. I mean, it's going to be crazy this Saturday on campus. So, yeah, going to be a fun time. All right, let's dive into our first topic here other than Michigan State sports. I want to talk about Floyd Mayweather really briefly here. And I know many of you out there may be saying, oh, here we go again. Floyd Mayweather, when can we stop talking about this man? But I found this story to be very interesting. It actually broke late last night, really late last night. I actually tweeted the story out. I don't even know what time it had to be at, you know, after midnight, I think. I was up pretty late working like I always am. I'm a night owl. But anyway, you know, just looking at this story, it's found that Floyd Mayweather took an IV injection of saline and vitamins that was banned under World Anti-Doping Agency guidelines, according to a report by SB Nation. Now, 3 weeks after the fight, Floyd Mayweather received an exemption from the United States Anti-Doping Agency. However, Nevada State Athletic Commission Executive Director Bob Bennett said that USADA does not have authorization to grant an exemption. Bennett said only the commission, which was not notified of the exemption until after it was given, can give an athlete an exemption. So, first off, you know, when I read this story, I had to really pick through this article to make sure that I didn't bash Floyd Mayweather without knowing the entire spectrum of things. I don't think Floyd Mayweather was in the wrong here, because at the end of the day, he went and said that, you know, from Mayweather's camp, they received an exemption from the United States Anti-Doping Agency, but they can't hand down that exemption. Only the Nevada State Athletic Commission can do that. So I think that Floyd Mayweather, you know, at the end of the day, first off, he wasn't taking any illegal substances here. It's not like he was taking steroids. He got an IV of saline and vitamins. So there were no illegal drugs being injected into Floyd Mayweather's body. They wanted to make sure he was hydrated, I believe, after the weigh-in. So he went through these protocols. You know, I can see Mayweather saying, okay, well, we got the okay from the U.S. anti-doping agency that I can do this. And doesn't Mayweather pay other people to know that, okay, they can't hand down that exemption, that only the Nevada State Athletic Commission can do that? So there was just miscommunication here. I feel like a lot of people are making a big deal out of nothing when it comes to this story, Isaac.
Yeah, it seems like this is just the bureaucratic busyness of boxing to me. Because at the end of the day, Mayweather is not the most affable, agreeable person in sports. And anybody's going to jump on the chance to criticize him for whatever they can. But this just seems like a mix-up to me. It's similar to when Jim Harbaugh had those two minor recruiting violations for playing basketball with recruits or something like that. That's ridiculous. That's not a big deal. This is something we should just do away with, because as much as we'd like and a lot of people would like to bash Mayweather because of his abrasive personality and his track record for out-of-the-ring issues.
And I've gone on the record, I don't like Floyd Mayweather as an athlete. I don't like him as a person. I mean, I'm not nothing against the guy. I don't hate the guy, but I'm just not privy to him. I think he's not humble at all. He doesn't have one humble bone in his body. You know, he comes off as uber arrogant. He thinks he's the best boxer of all time, which is totally delusional. I mean, there's multiple things I could go on and on and on about. But at the end of the day, I mean, hey, he's won, and he's done it the right way.
And the other thing is that fight against Manny Pacquiao, it's one of these Deflategate situations. Mayweather could have juiced up as much as he wanted before that, or he could have not worked out for a few months. He was such the better fighter in that bout.
I know where you're coming from. Is from the standpoint as, you know, in that AFC Championship game against the Indianapolis Colts.
Exactly.
I mean, New England Patriots, they could have played with the banana and still won that game.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, when comparing that to Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, it didn't matter, you know what Manny Pacquiao. And I really thought, Isaac, though, because to play devil's advocate for a minute, that wasn't the Manny Pacquiao that we were used to seeing.
It's true.
Even before the fight, I thought Manny Pacquiao was too nice. It seemed like he was just happy to be there. And Manny Pacquiao was, don't get me wrong, he's always nice. He's a great guy. But at the same time, in his past fights, you had seen more of an eye of the tiger attitude. You know, you didn't see him laughing as he walked to the ring and taking selfies before he walked to the ring. It was all about business when it came to the boxing side of things. For me, and who wouldn't be happy for collecting the amount of money that Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao took home on that night? But at the end of the day, I just felt like Manny Pacquiao was a little too happy just to be in that atmosphere.
Well, and to keep reflecting, it is Throwback Thursday, for goodness sake. But after all, Manny Pacquiao, what, 2-3 days after that fight, said, hey, I had a leg injury. Something like that. So,
right. Shoulder,
fairness,
I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever it was, I'm forgetting the exact injury.
Right,
it doesn't matter.
Right.
But the thing is, that could have seriously played a part. Now, I've got an issue with him saying that after the fight, not before the fight, before we spend $100 to watch that horrible match.
I'm still cutting grass to try and recover from that,
right? Me too. But either way, that could have been the issue that you were talking about. Pacquiao could have gone into that knowing there was no chance of winning. The point is, Mayweather won that one by a country mile.
Without a doubt. So I think this fight against Andre Berto, I don't know. I hope Berto surprises me. I've been watching, because I'm still a boxing fan to a degree. I've been watching the Floyd Mayweather and Andre Berto Showtime special leading up to the fight, you know, watching the different episodes. It's the same thing every single pre-fight of Mayweather's, and they document both fighters. I really like Andre Berto as a person. He seems to be a very, very hard worker. You know, he's got a pretty impressive track record, but at the end of the day, I just think he's kind of in over his heels, I think, because
there's no chance.
Yeah, I don't think he has any chance. I think he's a good fighter, and he will continue to hone his skills as a good fighter down the road. But it will really surprise me if he gives Floyd Mayweather a run for his money this Saturday.
Well, Mayweather picked a last fight that he was sure he was going
exactly
to win.
There's
no, and that's smart of him. There's nothing to criticize there. You don't want to go out on a loss. You don't want to go out on any of that. Muhammad Ali, if he made one mistake in his boxing career, it was going too long against too many good competitors towards the end of his career.
Right, and I see where you're going with
so
that.
Which is so respectable. Right. It's really respectable.
Right, exactly, exactly.
For Mayweather's legacy, he doesn't want to go down that same path, or else there's no chance he can say he's the best fighter ever.
I agree, and we all know how Floyd Mayweather has baited his entire career. He's picked and choose opponents, so he thought he had an upper edge based on maybe old age, a la De La Hoya, a la Shane Mosley. I could go on and on and on.
A la Pacquiao,
a la Manny Pacquiao, because Pacquiao was up there when they fought. So he baits and waits till they're older, you know, and he feels as though he's – and I don't want to get it wrong here. I mean, Floyd Mayweather, when he fought Manny Pacquiao, I mean, he's not a young fighter, but at the same time, I mean – look at the difference. You know what I mean?
It should have happened 5 years before.
It should have. It was 5 years too late, if you ask me. But at the end of the day, I mean, Floyd Mayweather has picked his fighters based on his having the edge within that fight before they even enter the ring. And that's something that when he says that he is TBE, the best ever, that's something that I totally cannot agree with. Because when you look at the fighters of the past, the guys like, you know, Sugar Shane Mosley, Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, George Foreman, you know, Rocky Marciano, Joe Lewis, those are guys that did not run away from a challenge. They would fight you in the backyard, let alone in a boxing ring if you called them out. So for me, Floyd Mayweather was a runner. He's the same way out of the ring as he is in the ring. He's very defensive. He's just going to run around you and run around things until he feels as though he's ready to attack. That's how Floyd Mayweather has made his moolah. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite Matt Argelander. He is the Michigan State beat writer for the State News. We'll talk Michigan State and Oregon right after the break. Again, we're taking your calls. Call in 517-355-9527. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And in just a second, we're going to be inviting beat writer for the Michigan State football team, Matt Argelander. He's actually going to join us via phone. I'm actually just getting a text from him right now. So we're going to get him on the phone line in just a sec. But again, folks, we encourage you all to call in 517-355-9527. I'm looking at my fantasy football roster right now, getting ready for the very start of the NFL season. And Isaac ran out for a second. We're gonna call Matt here, Isaac. So I'm gonna put his number in there right now. But I'm looking at my fantasy football roster right now, and I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty confident, I must say. You know, fantasy football is one of those years, though. It's one of those things, excuse me, where when you look at your roster, there's always those sleepers that come out of nowhere and you say, man, do I wish I had that guy. And you try to make moves, you know, when you see him have a breakout year. And sometimes it always doesn't work out because, you know, if you're in a big league like I am, I'm actually playing in a 16 team league this year, which is going to be absolutely just 16 teams. That's crazy, right? Absolutely crazy. And I'm also playing in an eight team league. So 8 and 16 team league. And you know, in the 16 team league, I mean, if you see that breakout star that no one has, and you try and go for him on the waiver wire, sometimes some of my boys, you know, they get there before me, and that always happens. So we're gonna break down fantasy football though later on in the hour, because I do have a few sleepers and a few guys that I think, hey, if you're looking for you know, an extra running back maybe, or an extra wide receiver, you may want to think about these guys if your starting guys aren't working out. So, and again, folks, we call in right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Also, I got to congratulate, because I saw this actually all throughout my Instagram page last night, saw it on my Twitter page as well. You know, I want to say about like 10 o'clock last night. And you know, for those of you who don't know, I'm a part, excuse me, of an African American fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. I'm an Alpha. I pledged back in my freshman year at Michigan State back in 2008, and became an alpha around then. And last night, how about this? Iota Phi Theta Fraternity Incorporated, they came out with their new inductees. And guess what? All four of them are Michigan State football players. Can you believe that? Shout out to Lawrence Thomas, R.J. Williamson, DeAnthony Arnett, and Shalik Calhoun. They all became members of Iota Phi Theta last night. They actually had their ceremony at the Michigan State University tennis courts, which aren't that far from Spartan Stadium. So congratulations. I'm told, though, that Shalik Calhoun was not in the house for that ceremony. But congratulations to the brother anyway. I mean, that's fantastic stuff for them. So four Iotas are now Michigan State football players. So congratulations to them. Well, I'm told we got them on the line right now. Let's now talk Michigan State football. Speaking of it, with Matt Argelander, who is a Michigan State football beat writer for the State News. Matt, how you doing?
How's it going, Al?
I am doing fantastic. Doing bad. Yeah, and actually, folks, Matt was the one who texted me last night and told me about the four football players who became Iotas last night. Matt, were you at the ceremony?
No, actually, I was in the city for a fantasy football draft, but one of my good friends from childhood is an Iota, and I happen to know that they just crossed an all football line.
How about that? That's pretty cool stuff. And Shalik, did I get that right? Shalik Calhoun was not in attendance?
Yeah, no, I didn't see him in any pictures, but I guess he did cross from what I've heard.
Dig that. That's very cool stuff. I just wonder how in the world that they go through the process while going through preseason football training camp at the same time. That's mind-boggling stuff, but that's another rant for another day, right?
Very impressive. It's very impressive, to say the least.
I tell you what, they must have been losing their minds. All right, Matt, let's talk MSU football now. Of course, we've been chatting about it, you know, throughout the entire week. We actually had yesterday Justin Wise of the Oregon Daily Emerald on to give his perspective from the Oregon Ducks' point of view. We chatted earlier this week with different callers giving their thoughts and predictions on the game, and I want to talk to you about it. Again, this is a big game. This will be the biggest game in college football throughout looking at the entire weekend slate of games. And Michigan State, if they do beat Oregon, I mean, this has immense implications for where the Spartans could end up at the end of the season if all goes right. Now, for you, Matt, I mean, going back to last week, first off, the Western Michigan game, Michigan State playing in Kalamazoo on the road, what were your takeaways and what did you learn about the Spartans that you may have been a bit uneasy about coming into the year?
Well, the rushing attack impressed me immediately. I think I was thinking that they wanted to eventually go to one back, but it looks like they're comfortable with running a two or three back rotation, and all of them looked good in that game. LJ Scott looked very impressive on that drive late. Gerald Holmes looked pretty good all game, and Madre London looked great.
Now,
so the running.
Yeah.
No, go for it. Go for it.
I'm looking at those three backs because there's been debate left and right about which back looked the best, who's going to eventually be the number one guy, because even though Madre London got the start, I mean, LJ Scott looked pretty impressive, and even Gerald Holmes for that matter. Who do you think is going to be the number one guy moving forward, even though Madre London is still slated as that number one guy as of now?
It's hard to say. I think they look fully comfortable not having a number one guy. I think D'Antonio talked about it a little bit at one of the press conferences, how they felt good about it. And, you know, I thought that they would go to a one, like eventually just decide a back like they normally do, but it looks like they're going to run a couple of guys all year to me.
Now, Matt, looking at Oregon, a very fast-paced offense. I mean, we saw what happened to Michigan State last year. They really controlled the first through three quarters up until like the waning moments of that third quarter and really let the game, just slip away from their fingertips. But looking at Oregon, I mean, what are your biggest concerns for Michigan State going into that game against the Ducks?
I guess some of the biggest concerns would just be turnovers and penalties. I think with a game like Oregon, you have to be on your P's and Q's, and I don't think Michigan State can afford mistakes or can afford to give up turnovers, but I think if they play a clean game, I honestly think they'll win. Oregon's defense looked pretty poor against Eastern Washington last week, And Michigan State, I mean, they played Western, but Western's not bad. They've got a future NFL wide receiver, I think, in Corey Davis. And Western had a pretty potent offense. I was pretty surprised to see how many points Oregon gave up. And Michigan State has the talent to win in the shootout for sure.
You think they do? Because I disagree. Isaac and I debated this yesterday, and I think if Michigan State gets into a shootout against Oregon, I think you're playing right into Oregon's hand. I mean, they love to get in shootouts. I mean, you saw in that Eastern Washington game, they got in a shootout against Eastern Washington, and they ended up winning, what, 63-42. Eastern Washington able to put up 42 points against that Oregon defense. I mean, if you're kind of cooking that offense, you got to be licking your chops. But at the same time, you want that defense to come up with stops against Vernon Adams and that offense. How do they do that?
I think they'll be able to come up with key stops when it comes down to the run game. I think they'll give up a lot of passing yards, but just like you saw against Western, I think they're going to focus on stopping the run, and it's going to result in a couple of key stops. And I wouldn't be surprised if they get a few momentum-swinging turnovers.
You okay? All right. All right. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Matt Argelander, who is a Michigan State beat writer for the State News. Now, Matt, looking at that secondary, because, again, you just stated that you think Vernon Adams and that offense could really find a lot of holes in that Michigan State secondary and put up a lot of yards against Michigan State's defense when it comes to the deep ball. Now, when analyzing how Michigan State, because that was one of their weak spots this past weekend against Western. It was special teams, and it was that secondary. What did you see that allowed Western to find those holes? And why do you think Michigan State secondary has been, you know, a bit rocky to start the year?
I think, honestly, it's just getting comfortable with being the guy. These are all guys that are – I mean, Monte Nicholson has been there before, but these are all guys that are really – getting their first experience as being the guy. They've never really had the opportunity to be the starter on the field, to be the guy that the defense is counting on. And I think it's just growing pains, honestly. They're still a very talented group. Monte Nicholson looks great. Vyante Copeland looked pretty great as well. It's a very talented group, but I think they'll get it together. I think they'll definitely improve throughout the season. I think there'll be some growing pains early. They'll give up some big points, but I think you'll see a little bit. And they're not going to be quite as talented as last year's group or the group before that with Darquez and Trey Wayans at the same time, but they'll be a talented group, and I think they'll get better as the season goes on.
Yeah, Copeland and, of course, Nicholson able to, have one interception apiece. But, again, you know, looking at what Zach Terrell was able to do, I mean, 365 yards through the air. That's usually not an MSU offense, but you know, and that's one of those things, you know, looking at this secondary, Matt, for me, you know, that was the big problem last year against Oregon. It was that secondary, you know, missed tackles and so on and so forth. But hey, Michigan State is favored in this game. I thought that, I gave my prediction on yesterday's show. I think Michigan State is going to pull this out. I think they have to score 40 points or more in order to do that. I think they can and will do that. For you, Matt, I want you to give us a prediction. Who do you think is going to win? What's the score going to be? And give us one or two breakout performers for this weekend.
All right. So I wrote a column a couple of days ago, well, yesterday on the State News, and I said 49-42 Michigan State. And I think ultimately Michigan State's O-line and a couple of key turnovers will be the deciding factor. I say Michigan State is up late and Oregon scores a garbage time touchdown. I say they're up 49-35 late. Oregon scores late, makes it close, but Michigan State, it doesn't really ever – I don't think it's really ever in doubt at the end.
Mm-hmm. What about some breakout performers? Who do you think is going to have a great game?
I like DeAnthony Arnett, and I like DeAnthony Arnett on offense. And I like Shalik Calhoun on defense. He didn't really get loose against Western. I think he's going to have a monster game against Oregon.
Okay. All right. So you got that Michigan State defense giving up a lot of points. 42 points. 42-49, right? 49-42, I mean?
I say they give up some big chunks of passing yards, but they'll get a couple of key stops, I think.
Gotcha. All right, folks. If you're just now joining us, we are chatting with Matt Argelander, Michigan State beat writer for the state news. All right, man, I got to get your take on this because we actually led our show with it. Of course, the big talk of the town right now is the Michigan State student section. We all saw what occurred last year, Michigan State taking on Nebraska. The student section fouled out in the fourth quarter, and it became big news. Even Michigan State Athletic Director Mark Hollis weighed in on it. It was not too pleased, especially in a big primetime game. I personally think that Michigan State, you know, the student section must stay the entire game because it is Oregon. It is a bigger game than looking, you know, if you want to compare the two, you know, what happened against Nebraska and compare this game to it. I mean, this is a bigger game. It has, again, as I stated, big implications for the Michigan State football year. What do you think is going to happen? And do you sort of sympathize with that student section if they do file out early?
I think a lot of fans will end up staying early. It's a huge game. I mean, staying late. It's a huge game. They know that. But, I mean, to be honest, you have to think about it. A lot of kids are going in there and they're drinking. They've been drinking for part of the day. And if we're talking about late night games on game day on ESPN, this game is going to last like five, almost six hours with commercial breaks and all of it takes forever.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised to see some students bow out of there pretty late, especially if it starts to get lopsided either way.
I think that's the key. Yeah, I think if it's close in the fourth quarter, you got to stay. But if it is a lopsided victory, either way, I mean, I could see where you're going with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if it stays close, I think the majority of people will stay. I mean, for some people, it's just going to be tough from a day of, like, pre-gaming and sitting and standing straight up in the stadium for 5.5 hours. Is just some people are not going to do it at the end of the day.
Yeah, and there are some that would argue, and I could see this argument as well. I mean, the at-home game experience is becoming, you know, arguably better than the at-game experience because of the different angles you get, HD, you get commentary, replays left and right. No, I see exactly where you are coming from. Matt, my man, I see you this weekend, my friend. You excited?
Oh, yeah, I'm pumped. I think it's going to be a great game. Either way it goes, it's going to be awesome. The environment is going to be crazy, and I think East Lansing is just going to be electric.
Matt Argelander, Michigan State football beat writer for the State News. Matt, how can people read your work?
You can go to the State News and search my name. You can check at the snooze sports account on Twitter. You can check my Twitter at Matt Argy. It's MATTARGI. I retweet most of my articles. So, yeah, that's about – you can always check out the State News on the website, too.
All right, Matt, I'll see you this weekend. You take care, my man.
All right, see you this weekend, Al.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this Thursday edition of WKR's Current Sports by bringing you Throwback Thursday and a very brief fantasy football overview. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back. Well, I'll tell you what, folks, it is Thursday, and usually each and every Thursday night on WKR-TV, you can check out Current Sports TV at 10:30. We've moved our time from Thursday nights at 10 to now 10:30. We've pushed it back 30 minutes, and we had a bit of a boo-boo yesterday. Yeah, and that's why it's been kind of crazy ever since we finished our taping with Anthony Iani yesterday. Of course, Anthony, former Michigan State men's basketball player, who was diagnosed with autism, has done some, you know, great things in the community. He's now a motivational speaker. But Ant was my guest yesterday. We filmed the entire episode. And get this, we had a communication error. We are actually preempted for this week. Can you believe that? I believe we have Ken Burns. His show will be airing this week in replace of Current Sports TV. We didn't know. There was a schedule mix-up. So what we're going to actually do is put this edition of Current Sports TV on our website at video.wkar.org. So today, you know, you can catch that episode since we will not be airing it. We don't want to put all that hard work that we put into our taping yesterday to not good use. So we're going to put it online. And actually later on, I'll be actually going to Atlanta from September 28th to October 2nd for that week. So we will be running it. I'm going to record a fresh intro and you know, an up-to-date show. And I'm going to roll in that interview for TV as well. So you can't catch Current Sports TV tonight at 10:30 on WKAR TV, but you can do it by just simply going to video.wkar.org. I'll tweet it out, so follow me on Twitter at AlMartinWKAR. I'll also put it on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Don't you hate when there's communication errors? But it happens. That's life, right? So it'll be online. And again, later on this month, we will. I'll do a fresh intro, and you'll be able to see it on your televisions of the week of September 28th. And it was a fantastic time. Anthony Iani, he was fantastic as always. Well, it's time for Throwback Thursday. How about we hop into our current sports time machine and take a look at what exactly happened in sports history for September 10th.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
That's right. It's Thursday, folks, and it's time to take a look at what happened on this particular Thursday, September 10th. Throwback Thursday. Gotta love it, right? All right, 1961. Mickey Mantle tied a Major League Baseball record for home runs when he hit the 400th of his career. Mickey, he was good. 1972, the great Gale Sayers of the Chicago Bears retired from the National Football League. Gale Sayers, one of the all-time greats to ever play the game on the gridiron. Many people actually would argue and say that Gale Sayers is actually the greatest running back of all time. You always hear Gale Sayers, you know, compared to Jim Brown. You know, that debate, you know, could go on for years and years and years, and you can make a compelling argument for both. But on this day, back in 1972, Gale Sayers bidded the NFL to do. In 1974, Lou Brock of the St. Louis Cardinals set a new Major League Baseball record when he stole his 105th base of the season. That is a lot of stolen bases. Salute to Lou Brock in 1988. And Serena is trying to chase this feat as we speak. Steffi Graf, she achieved tennis's first Grand Slam since Margaret Court did in 1970. And again, Serena Williams, she's keeping on right now as she has an opportunity to accomplish that feat. The first calendar Grand Slam since Steffi Graf back in 1988. So back in 1988 on this day, that's when Steffi accomplished that feat. In 1992, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, a federal jury struck down professional football's limited free agency system. In 2002, Gary Sutter retired from the NHL after a 17-year career. Sutter really known for big hits throughout his NHL career. I was taking a look at a few of those this morning. He is unbelievable. And in 2006, Roger Federer won his third straight U.S. Open and his 12th overall. Also, I have a few birthdays to mention. In 1929, the birth of Arnold Palmer. How about that? He's not just, you know, a lemonade, okay? He's not just an Arizona iced tea, folks. Arnold Palmer is an actual golfer. I hate when I talk to, like, you know, my family members, Isaac, and I'm like, yeah, you guys know who Arnold Palmer is? They're like, oh, yeah, the drink that we get, that we go down to the corner store and buy all the time? No. He's one of the greatest golfers of all time.
But who thinks he's just a lemonade? He's a lemonade and an iced tea. Right.
That's a good one.
You got to know that.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's like he is a lemonade and an iced tea combined, isn't he? But, dude, I mean, I hate when I talk to people about Arnold Palmer who don't really know golf, and they're like, oh, yeah, I love that drink. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, dude. He's a PGA golfer, one of the greatest of all time. So anyway, happy birthday to Arnold Palmer. I do love that Arizona iced tea, though. It's fantastic. That lemonade iced tea mix. Excuse me. Thank you for the correction, Isaac. 1934, the birth of Roger Eugene Maras, a.k.a. Roger Maris, in Hibbling, Minnesota. He was a Major League Baseball player for the Cleveland Indians, Kansas City Athletics, New York Yankees, and St. Louis Cardinals. He also won the American League Most Valuable Player back in 1960 and 61. 1946, the birth of James R. Hines. He's an American sprinter. He won the Olympic gold in 1968. And, yeah, D-Town, baby, Detroit Pistons, 1948, the birth of Bob Lanier, NBA center. He not only played with the Detroit Pistons, but also the Milwaukee Bucks. So a happy, happy birthday, Bob Lanier. All right, Isaac, well, are you ready for some football? Tonight, the Patriots play host to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tom Brady, I tell you what, he gets his shot. You know, no four-game suspension for the Golden Boy. He'll be on the gridiron, and I know a few of my pals who actually have Tom Brady. They drafted him as the whole case was going on between the NFL and Tom himself, and they're pretty, you know, pretty stoked right now that they have Tom Brady. He will be starting tonight against the Pittsburgh Steelers. How's your fantasy football team looking, Isaac?
Oh, I'm loving mine so far. I might have reached a little bit with Gronk. I admit. But it's a PPR league. Mm-hmm. So I went up with, number five, number six pick and drafted Gronk. Not terrible reach, but a little bit of one, definitely. But right now it's on NFL.com. Right now my stars: Matthew Stafford, DeMarco Murray, Alfred Morris, Dez Bryant, DeAndre Hopkins, Rob Gronk, Alfred Blue, Jarvis Landry, Ryan Tannehill, Tevin Coleman, Dan Bailey at kicker, and Buffalo Bills on defense.
Ah, nice. Do you have one or two sleepers that, you know, these are guys that you think are going to have a great year that no one sees coming?
I certainly do. One is Saints tight end Josh Hill. Because Saints,
of course, you would say Saints, tight end, right?
Dude, New they Orleans traded away Jimmy Graham. And when you trade away Jimmy Graham, then you've got somebody who you think can fill in that spot. In a passing offense, you have to. So, yes, expect a big season from Josh Hill. He could be the guy this year that nobody saw coming.
What kind of coffee was New Orleans sipping when they gave away Jimmy Graham, dude?
It actually makes a little bit more sense. I think with the aging of Drew Brees, then they tried to transition more to a run game, so improve that rush
but it's Jimmy
offensive
Graham.
Line.
This is one of the greatest tight ends to ever play the game of football.
He is.
He's unbelievable.
I actually like it going forward. Also, frees up cap room for re-signing other players. You?
I got one. I think no one's going to see this one coming. And I actually drafted him late, like in the fifth or sixth round. His name is Duke Johnson. Every year, there's that one guy who rushes for like 1,200 yards that no one sees coming. And Duke Johnson, he's actually running back for the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland Browns, and I'm reading, I wanted to read a snippet here from SI. Though he began training camp number three on the depth chart, the third round pick from Miami will have a chance to prove he's more than just a change of pace back. After all, it's not as if he had to steal carries from Jim Brown and Eric Metcalf. And I think, you know, looking at preseason reports on Duke Johnson, everyone's been pretty high on this kid. He looks to be very impressive. He's my sleeper that I think is going to be really turn hits.
That is a good one. My other one is Devin Funchess for Carolina. I think they're still looking to replace Brandon LaFell since he went to the Patriots.
Okay. All right. Well, that's our show, folks. Thanks so much for tuning into Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKR AM 870 East Lansing. Tomorrow we will have the official DJ of ESPN's College Game Day, Baby Mac. She actually played college ball for Pat Summit out in Tennessee. You don't want to miss tomorrow's show. Have a fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.